There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic? It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not?
We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek, their weekly look at your grassroots and independent media environment. I'm Drew Tirico. Paul is on his way to the Allied Media Conference this weekend. It's in Bowling Green, Ohio. Today we're going to be talking to Ondine Gross of the very locally and independently produced IMC Radio News. And we'll have some Media Geek headline news for you, so stay with us. Media Geek Headline News features stories about our communications environment that typically get relegated to the business pages of our newspapers and often don't get reported at all in the electronic media. News on media law, regulation, and industry is not just of interest to investors and stockholders, it's important to all of us, especially if we want to have a role in changing our media environment to meet the needs of a more democratic society. In the coming week, Portland, Oregon will hold two town hall media sessions open to the public to explore the impact of news coverage and media consolidation. FCC Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein will also be attending. Both commissioners voted against last year's loosening of media ownership restrictions and have consistently advocated media reforms to reduce consolidation. All five FCC commissioners were invited to attend the conference. The first meeting, titled Our Democracy, Our Airwaves, is scheduled for this Saturday, June 19th. This meeting is intended to focus on airtime given to political candidates and the effective electoral purchasing power that money interests have. The second, titled The Future of Media, will be held on June 24th and is being presented by the Free Press Organization. The conference will explore media reform, public standards for news coverage, protection of consumer rights, and how the FCC functions. Presenters plan to identify who owns what media outlets and what effect that can have on political and social information. Record labels are putting pressure on the FCC to increase the copyright security of digital radio. The Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA, has recently stepped up its lobbying campaign to prevent quote-unquote piracy of digitally broadcast audio through the use of either encryption or copyright markers. RIAA Chairman Mitch Bainwall said association members were big supporters of the relatively new technology, but added that, quote, our enthusiasm is not blind, end quote. Digital radio produces CD-quality sound over FM frequencies and FM-quality sound over AM frequencies. It also allows for other information to be broadcast, such as song titles, advertisements, and copyright flags. There has also been one digital car radio manufactured with recording capabilities already. So now the record industry is suddenly afraid that their profits will be recorded away off the radio. Only about 100 of the nation's 13,000 stations, including KKBT-FM 92.3, KTNQ-AM 1020, KSCA-FM 101.9, and KROQ-FM 106.7 in L.A., broadcast in the digital format, which was approved by the FCC in October 2002. And obviously, radio music isn't ideal for copying due to the high ad and promo content and frequent edits to shave time off album tracks. Music is rarely heard in its entirety, and many in the radio industry are skeptical of the RIAA's claim that recording will cause business to deteriorate. Quote, the 300,000-plus digital audio broadcast receivers in the UK have resulted in none of the harm predicted by the RIAA here in the U.S., end quote, says Michael Petricone, technology vice president of the Consumer Electronics Association in Arlington, Virginia. The association is asking for piracy controls as part of an FCC proceeding that will set digital radio service rules for broadcasters, telling station operators what services they can offer and establishing their public interest obligations. In seeking the government's endorsement of encryption technology or a digital audio marker, the RIA hopes to follow the success of Hollywood Studios that last year persuaded the FCC to adopt a similar quote-unquote broadcast flag marker in television to combat digital piracy. And that's for digital television. Broadcasters, however, seem uninterested in accommodating another copy protection scheme, saying it would disrupt the rollout of digital radio. Quote, "The RIAA has known that digital radio was coming for nearly a decade now. They never raised this issue until we had stations on the air and licensing deals and receivers in the marketplace. If their request is something that will stall the rollout of digital radio, that's not something we would support," end quote, said Dennis Warden, a spokesman for the National Association of Broadcasters. And if broadcasters don't beef up their election coverage this year, Congress may force the industry to provide free airtime to political candidates. That was the warning from Senator John McCain, a Republican of Arizona. Quote, "If this continues, you will see greater impetus for free time," end quote, the lawmaker said on Wednesday during a press briefing on Capitol Hill. The senator said he is particularly concerned by a study of the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication, showing that more than half of all top-rated local news broadcasts in the 7 weeks leading up to the 2002 elections continued no campaign coverage. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell, who also attended, said there is little the government can do about the lack of coverage other than considering it as a factor during a station's license renewal proceedings. But Senator McCain said a similar showing by broadcasters this year would breathe fresh life into free time legislation, an initiative the senator has been promoting unsuccessfully for years. Quote, "You will see legislation that will mandate free time," end quote, said Senator McCain. Also at the briefing, Senator McCain and Mr. Powell announced that they have urged major broadcasters in writing to increase their coverage voluntarily. Quote, "We look forward to hearing from all broadcasters on their specific plans to further educate voters during this election year," end quote. They said in a June 15th letter to the Big Four TV networks and the National Association of Broadcasters. Said FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein, who is also on hand, quote, "We're putting broadcasters on notice that we're going to be watching extremely closely this year," end quote. And that's what's been going on this week in our media environment. To catch up on more news and grassroots independent media, check out the Media Geek website at www.mediageek.org. Also, I've got a quick announcement. David Barsamian, who's the founder and director of Alternative Radio, it's been on the air since 1986, and it airs on WEFT and WILL, will be on the program Media Matters, which airs on Sunday at 1 p.m. on AM 580, WILL station. And unless Bob McChesney, who's the host of that program, has taped the show with him, you can call in and ask him your questions. So he's kind of a legendary figure among independent radio producers. And so stay with us. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Media Geek. So today with me in the studio is Ondine Gross. As I mentioned before, she's a producer and reporter for the Independent Media Center radio news program that airs here on WEFT on Mondays. She's agreed to come and chat with me about locally produced independent radio news. Thanks for being with me, Ondine.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
So how did you first get involved with producing news, radio news, or whatever kind of news? How did you start doing this stuff?
Well, I sort of have to go back because what I do for a living is I'm a school psychologist, and one of the things that is sort of the biggest gift about my job is just getting to hear people's stories in my office. I've worked in a variety of settings and with people from all walks of life, and when the door is closed and people speak at a very deep level about their lives and the lives of their children, I'm very moved. And when I started hearing radio that told people stories, I was really interested in that and wanted to get involved with some type of media expression, but felt that I might not have access to the kind of training I would need to do that. And in this community, it wasn't very accessible to suddenly go back and become a journalist through the U of I or to study filmmaking or something like that. And I happened to be looking through a YMCA Communiversity catalog, and there was an ad for a radio production class taught by Clint Papet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's how I heard about it. And I'd never heard of the Independent Media Center.
And who is Clint Papet?
Clint Papet is a independent media person who had, by virtue of a grant, been in charge of recruiting people to produce radio and providing training for those people. So I was lucky to get to work with Clint while he was on that grant, which has now expired, and to be one of his students. And it was just a wonderful mentoring experience.
Really? So that's how you started learning about radio production?
Yes.
You jumped right into radio?
Yes. And then kind of coinciding with the technical instruction was me learning about what the spirit of the Independent Media Center was, which is you can become the media, that you don't have to be Dan Rather or Walter Cronkite to tell your stories or to tell other people's stories.
So what was it that first made you feel like you were starting to get the hang of doing that kind of stuff? I mean, how was that experience of trying to learn about technical things while you were trying to, I guess you were also trying to learn about how to produce stories too, right?
Well, the first confession I have to make is that I have not achieved mastery of the technical things, and I still sort of rely on other people to help me with that. I'm afraid I fall into the category of people over 40 who are a little technophobic. And even though people have tried to show me things, I mean, I can certainly work on the SoundForge computer system and sort of cut and paste and things like that, but really going from A to Z with the whole thing and getting it on the air, I do need assistance. But I'm sort of living proof that if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah, really. Well, I think that's something that we really want to get out there through this interview, is encourage people to feel like that, you know, this is something that you can do.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, what do you like about working with radio as a medium?
Well, I was kind of inspired by, I'm a big NPR fan and also This American Life, and I was sort of inspired by the intimacy of radio and how personal the stories can be. And so what I wanted to do was sort of take what inspired me from my work, which is people's stories, and I started a series at the IMC called Good to Know, in which I was able to showcase diverse people from the community who really have amazing lives and are doing amazing things, which you don't read about in the News Gazette and you just don't hear about unless you happen to cross paths with them. So the radio, I felt, gave me an opportunity to showcase these people and to introduce them to the community and to introduce their causes, and that was a lot of fun.
So that's how you started getting introduced to working with people in the community, I see.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things that if you say, hey, can I interview you for the radio, you know, it's sort of like, ooh.
Yeah, is that intimidating to start doing that? I mean, to be able to walk up to people and say, I'd like to interview you, I want to ask you all these questions, and, you know, these are people that might not necessarily have all the information, neither do you, you know, and so you're trying to fumble around. I mean, what was that experience like for you?
Well, one of the things I tried to do was to come prepared and to not be intimidating. I think one of the things I like about community radio is that it's made very clear that anyone can try it and you don't have to be a professional. And I'm certainly not a professional, as any listener will soon find out. And I still have a lot of growth to do just in terms of, you know, my approach on the radio, my radio. At first, actually, it was kind of funny because I started off trying to achieve this radio voice, because when you listen to people on the radio, they always sound kind of like this or kind of like interesting. So then I sort of abandoned that really quick and just what you hear is my regular voice. But what I tried to do with people is make a safe environment, and I did a lot of homework and research and prepared the questions in advance and let people see them in advance and so forth. And I think when people know that you come with an open heart and really want to help publicize their good work, that it is not so intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. So you've been producing, well, you said you've had some help with the production, but you've done all the work on your own stories, right? I mean, that's been just you. You haven't had a news team or anything.
No.
With you, have you?
Basically, the way it works is that I had a lot of ideas, and it was really fun because I'd been carrying around these ideas in my head for a really long time, and the radio gave me an opportunity to sort of realize them. Mm-hmm. And I had sort of this list in my head of people I wanted to interview. So I've been doing that for about the last year. And pretty after a while, the list has kind of run dry. And because I mainly interviewed people I knew or people mm-hmm. I'd met or people I'd come across in my work or something. And now I'm sort of interviewing people who other people introduced me to. And actually learning about and exploring issues that I might not have before. One of the things that I was very interested in exposing was diverse people working on diverse causes, which were things like GLBT issues or racial diversity issues or the plight of refugees in our community and things like that, whereas more recently I've been looking at things like transportation issues in our town.
Really?
And interviewing like MTD folks and stuff.
So have you had to step outside? You feel like you've had to step outside your personal community to do this somewhat.
No, it's still sort of Champaign-Urbana-centered, which makes it, I think, interesting for me as a resident of Champaign-Urbana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I mean, not necessarily...
you mean stepping out of my comfort zone.
Geographically, but, yeah, sort of socially, I mean. You've had to go out and interview people that are outside of that. And I guess how far do you feel like you've gone out, and would you like to go further?
I would... definitely like to go further, and once you get started in this kind of work, you get sort of excited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
the other thing that I would love to do is get more involved with the national community of people who make radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing that's weird about radio is that it's sort of a black hole, and you know, it's not like putting on a recital and having your family in the audience. I mean, when you put something on the radio, it's not instant feedback. And
yeah.
You always, you know, you don't want to bug people and say, hey, did you hear my show?
Have you gotten feedback about your pieces?
Yeah, but not the level that would make it even more fun, you know, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of my pieces are controversial.
Really?
And they're meant to be thought-provoking. And so I would love for people to react. And sometimes that's sort of lacking, although I did establish a website, but the website is kind of, like me, not quite technologically all linked up yet. So,
did somebody else help you with the website,
yes,
too?
My brother does this for a living, so
okay.
He set it up for me.
So it pays to have friends that know how to do the technical stuff. But
that's right.
You've been doing all the stories. That's important. That's the most important part. Well, what are some examples of some stories you worked on? Let's talk about that now.
Well, I guess everyone has sort of the burning thing they want to do. And my first story was probably my most ambitious and for a lot of reasons. And what I did with my very first story was I explored anti-Semitism in the anti-war movement.
Really?
This was before the war in Iraq. And this was when there was a lot of protests. And I'm a Jewish person, and I've always considered myself progressive and anti-war and all that. And yet I was starting to feel kind of weird and uncomfortable around some anti-war activity. And I didn't want to make it one of those knee-jerk things like anybody who criticizes Israel is anti-Semitic. But I thought that there was some nuance here that needed to be explored a little bit. And so Clint actually introduced me to a couple of folks from AWARE, which is a local anti-war group. And that turned out to be very interesting because they had sort of very definite and even what I would call radical views that about even the validity of exploring anti-Semitism. So,
right.
Yeah, they didn't think it existed or that it was valid to even question it. So that turned out to be sort of interesting. And then I also interviewed the director at that time of Hillel, which is the Jewish community group on campus. So I interviewed three people. I added music. I ended with a song. And I meant it for it to be just a posing questions type of thing. So that was kind of fun, but I understood that it ticked a lot of people off.
Yeah, what kind of responses did you get?
Well, it was really interesting because it sort of allowed the IMC to examine its function in terms of, are we here to let people just make community radio? Because one of the criticisms was, is that, is she progressive enough? And Clint actually, and all of the people kind of rallied and said, you know what? She can tell her story. And there is no litmus test for how progressive you are. And I sort of thought the whole thing was kind of funny because it's kind of like saying, how much of a feminist are you, or, you know, how black are you? Or, you know, it's like, how dare anybody hold up that measuring stick?
Do you think that's a common perception that from people you've talked to, that that you have to be a certain amount of radicalness to be a part of the Independent Media Center or be a part of the different anti-war groups or things like that? Is that something you think is...
You know, I think that one of the reasons I like talking about the Independent Media Center is that people probably do have that feeling about it, but it actually is a pretty diverse group, and I'm sort of living proof of it. I sort of look like your average housewife, even though I'm not a house. I mean, I'm a mother, and I'm married and all that, but, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman for the most part,
mm-hmm.
And if you actually talk to people from the Independent Media Center, they'll say that if you go to meetings, it's a pretty diverse group. But I do think that the most people, what they know of the IMC, they think it's that ragtag group of hippies or whatever. But smart ones. They're very brainy hippies.
You think that sort of is intimidating to a lot of people then? I mean,
I really don't think a lot of people know what the Independent
really?
Media Center
okay.
is or what it's for. So I just don't know that they know what it can be for. And I particularly think about people who are interested in media or
right.
journalism. It's like, my gosh, why aren't there more U of I students or Parkland students or high school students using this facility? Because it's such an interesting opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might say the same thing about, I don't know how much experience you have here at WEFT. I mean, here at WEFT there are also, you know, these barriers that people have to overcome. And once you get involved, you find that everyone here is very nice.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's a new group, and everyone here is into their own little area of radio. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's why WEFT is so great, because there's so many people doing so many different things. But people tend to have sometimes a very narrow focus, too. And, you know, and if you can't talk to them about, you know, old blues, then you might not have anything to talk to them about.
Right.
So, I mean, in the Independent Media Center is usually there's a lot of radical politics there, and people, I think, have gotten the impression that maybe, you know, there's only radical people there.
Mm-hmm.
So you interviewed, the first project you worked on stirred up some controversy in the anti-war community, which is, you know, tends to be linked with the IMC, but is not exclusively linked with the IMC.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other projects you worked on?
Well, after that, I did a series called Good to Know, in which I think I mentioned earlier, I introduced people from the community who work to build community. And what I was interested in is, who are these people who are sort of brave, and, you know, what is the line that causes somebody to change from private citizen to activist, for lack of a better word? So, for example, I interviewed Amy Rickman, who created Girl Zone, and that was just really interesting to see what inspired her. What I wanted to do was really showcase the people as individuals, and really talk about their sources of inspiration and the work involved. You know, like, how do you even know how to start a nonprofit organization? I interviewed
mm-hmm.
even the people who started the IMC. Like, what did you guys do? Just wake up one day and start? Let's start the IMC. How do you know how to do that? I interviewed Tim Shea, who's a social worker who is doing work to inform people about the needs and rights of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender youth, particularly in schools, issues of harassment, things like that. I interviewed Ha Ho, who's the director of the East Central Illinois Refugee Center, about some of the people who come to our community from foreign countries who we might not even see, who are not visible to us in our day-to-day life. I interviewed John Lee Johnson, and we spoke about African-American issues, particularly in schools, the politics of the consent decree, stuff like that. And I interviewed Lydia Khoury, who's a Palestinian-American who teaches a class on intergroup dialogue at the U of I, and that was really interesting because she puts together Middle Eastern students and Jewish students who talk about their own roots and just the feelings of kind of maneuvering through all this. I've also interviewed Carol Spindell talking about the Chief, and more recently did some work on, I did like a three-part series on the MTD transportation issues, because it seemed like the News Gazette was kind of presenting some information in a biased way, and I thought maybe it'd be interesting for folks to learn what all the hoopla is about the tram and about annexation of Savoy and things like that.
Wow, so you've really gone through a pretty diverse range of subjects here. I mean,
yeah.
This is all local stuff, but I mean, what did you do to prepare yourself for the information on all these? Did you just kind of, you know, how did you hit the street, so to speak, you know?
Well, a lot of it is just, I guess I'm a curious person,
mm-hmm.
so wanting to know more about people just, I mean, I'd love to interview you and say, oh, how'd you start this radio show? Tell me about yourself. Where are you from? You know, mm-hmm. I'm just curious about people. So a lot of it is just wanting to know what drives people. But I did research, you know, I hit the library or I'd hit the internet and try to prepare as much as possible, read up on it. So it's kind of fun to mm-hmm. research topics and then prepare some questions so you don't feel you're just winging it. And
did you spend a lot of time doing that research?
I'd say that, you know, maybe for every interview, 3 to 4 hours.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a fair amount of research. But
yeah. And then I think that if you're the interviewer and you come with prepared questions, it puts the interviewee at ease
mm-hmm.
so they don't feel like you're just fumbling around, even though you're I'm a rank amateur, but, you know, as much as you want to try to look somewhat together, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think that means as far as in a professional context? I mean, there's sort of a professional media, you know, and
mm-hmm.
then there's us independent media, you know. What do you think separates us?
Well, that's a good question because once you start doing this, you want to sort of compare, like, oh, wait a minute, you know, my piece was as interesting as what I just heard on the radio.
Right.
And I think that there's some amazing stuff going on now with independent media that, and you can get kind of bummed out thinking about, you know, how do we get wider exposure for some of this stuff? These are really compelling stories, whether it's exploring, you know, the criminal justice system or local politics. I mean, they're really important stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I sort of see, I mean, that's what excites me about the whole media movement, to tell you the truth.
So you think it's sort of a distribution gap, really? I
see it as maybe changing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, I believe in my heart that, you know, 25, 50 years from now, somebody's going to come who's an historian
mm-hmm.
who's going to say, wow, what did you all do here? This is really amazing. This was the beginning of something very big.
Mm-hmm.
And this was its inception, its birth all around the country of this independent media movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I am totally convinced that historians are going to explore this and just kind of ask the questions that you asked, like, how did you all do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important, but I don't think it's going to leave anytime soon. I think it's here to stay.
Wow. Are there any stories that within independent media that you wanted to do, but you couldn't for one reason or another? I mean,
no.
Not really?
And that's the beauty of it,
wow.
is that I have felt really welcomed at the Independent Media Center to do anything at all. And it really is an opportunity for people's voices to be heard. And I think that that's quite a gift that they're given.
Okay. Who are your, like, sort of heroes, or who do you think are leaders in media production that you look up to, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think that my heroes are the unsung heroes, maybe.
Really?
You know, just the people whose names you might not know and who maybe don't have the cult following, but just people who are risking their lives, particularly overseas. You know, we take so much for granted in this country, but when you read about journalists who are losing their lives, I mean, I'm just in awe of those people who are in countries without a free press, who are struggling to tell their stories and get the truth out.
Well, great. I think that's a good place to stop. Thanks so much for being with me on Dean. And you can hear on the IMC Radio News, again, that airs on Mondays here on WEFT at 5:30, excuse me. So, and I hope people listening out there have gain some sense that, you know, this is something that you can do too. Ondine said, you know, she just came into this, you know, with not a professional degree in journalism or anything, just an interest to learn about what's going on around her. And so, I mean, if people are interested in actually getting involved, maybe at the Independent Media Center, how would they go about doing that?
Well, the Independent Media Center has a website, which is www.imc.org, and there is a radio group.
It's UCIMC.
Oh, excuse me, UCIMC.org. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our next meeting is Tuesday at 11 at the IMC, which is on Main Street. And you're just, anybody's welcome. We're always looking for people to come in. Training is available, and hand-holding is available, and anything you need. And it's really, really fun.
Great. Thanks a lot, Undine.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Drew.
That brings us to the close of another edition of Media Geek. Media Geek's producer is Drew Tirico, and I'm Paul Riesmandel. The Media Geek Radio Show is free to rebroadcast by non-commercial stations for non-profit purposes. Please contact us for permission to excerpt. Email me at paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.